This is the Ethanol Report, featuring an interview with Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, during a visit to the 2009 Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois.
And we're going to talk a little bit about ethanol and what's going on. There's always something going on with ethanol. One of the things we're looking at right now, we're waiting for EPA to make a couple of decisions. One on the on increasing the allowable blend of ethanol and gasoline. First of all, tell me why that's so important. And secondly, where do you think we stand at this point with EPA? When do you think we're going to hear something?
EPA needs to make a decision on the petition that Growth Energy filed, because ethanol is already blended in 80% of the nation's motor fuel. We are careening towards that blend wall in which we're not going to be able to sell any more ethanol. And if refiners are going to be able to meet their requirements under the renewable fuel standard, if the United States is to maximize its production and use of renewable fuels in a way that we are capable of, then we need to lift this artificial barrier of 10%. And EPA has until December 1st to make a decision. They can make a decision sooner than that, but they are evaluating all of the data. There is more data that the agency would like to see, particularly with respect to catalytic converter durability tests that DOE is doing that may not be done until next spring. And so if EPA had their druthers, they would probably let the December 1 deadline come and go and not issue any kind of a statement until that data is in. But I think there's going to be a great deal of pressure for them to do something sooner. I think that one of the things that they can do sooner is to take an interim step. In the comments that the Renewable Fuels Association filed, we laid out how under EPA's existing rules that allow for the stacking of different oxygenates. Now, it was done back in the day when MTBE was blended widely, and they allowed 2% MTBE to be blended on top of 10% ethanol. And with other tolerances, it would certainly suggest that from an oxygen content perspective, 12% ethanol would already be allowed. And if EPA didn't have a concern about the oxygen level associated with 12% oxygenate, then they shouldn't have a concern if all of that oxygen is coming from one blend component. And we believe that that is an interim step that they could take today if they wanted to. EPA staff, bureaucrats that have been there a long time and have grown quite accustomed to the status quo, are not overly enthusiastic about taking that step. And what we're trying to do is convince the policymakers, the administration, the people that sign the checks for these bureaucrats, that is indeed a step that is not only allowed by the law, but something that is quite necessary to allow this industry to grow in the way that it should.
What about RFS2, the Renewable Fuel Standard, the second phase of that was passed back in December of 2007, still has not been implemented. We're going on almost 2 years. A lot of concern about the way indirect land use might be figured in there and how that might affect the use of good homegrown fuels like ethanol. Where are we standing? Are we ever going to see this implemented?
At some point, yes. EPA will get around to implementing this program. I'm not as concerned as perhaps the biodiesel industry might be that they get it implemented sooner. I am concerned that they get it implemented right. The fact of the matter is, this is the first time the agency has been tasked with the responsibility of determining the carbon footprint of an industry. And they are learning that that's not an easy thing to do. They're learning that there's no scientific consensus about how to do that. And their proposal that they issued in May on this certainly didn't do anything to end the confusion or to build consensus. Adopted this principle of indirect land use that we find not just not scientifically sound, but silly. And we have spent a lot of time, a lot of research dollars, trying to understand this issue better and to convince the agency that just because an acre of corn is grown in this country for the production of ethanol, it certainly does not mean that an acre of rainforest the rainforest in Brazil is going to be cut down. And that is quite literally the calculation that the agency is currently making. It is just simply ridiculous. So we want them to get it right. we're in the crosshairs of this right now because we're the first on the beach. Behind us are a whole lot of other industries that ultimately will have a stake in this. And as the Congress looks at cap and trade and the Congress looks at creating policy on carbon, the same issues are going to exist. What they'll find out is that if EPA is successful in abusing the statutory language of the RFS in a way that allows them to import these theories such as indirect land use into a regulatory structure, then the United States may as well just export all its business, because there's no way that we will ever meet the carbon targets if EPA is assigning penalties for the business decisions and carbon impacts in other countries. So this is a very big issue, and we're a long way from having it resolved.
Well, here at Farm Progress Show, the people that are walking around this event are the people that are growing this fuel. And one really positive thing that we've got is we're looking at the second largest corn crop. What does that tell these regulators? What should they get out of that? The fact that we can produce food, fuel, and fiber for this world.
Well, I do wish that there were more policymakers, government officials, regulators here at this event and would see how much progress has been made, can see what modern agriculture is all about, climb up in a tractor and see the technology that is in those things, and understand that, you know, they can use satellites to direct where they're putting fertilizer today. And, you know, this is not your grandfather's farm anymore. And they live in the 1940s, and they think we're still getting 60 bushels an acre of corn when we're going to get 160 bushels this year. And there really isn't an appreciation for what is possible, much less an appreciation for what is. Really, they should be here, and they should be seeing what is going to come and what is possible. And, you know, they would perhaps be much better regulators and have a much more sophisticated understanding of what their regulations mean.
Bob, you always say that you're an optimist, and you've been in this industry for a couple of decades now, and we keep seeing the ethanol industry and getting knocked down and keep getting back up again. Why do you remain such an optimist about this domestically produced fuel?
Well, I'm an optimist because we're producing 10.5 billion gallons. And when I started in this industry, people laughed at the fact that we might actually get to a billion. I mean, the kind of growth and change that I've seen has been a real lesson to me about what is possible. I'm an optimist because driving through southern Illinois, you see a corn crop that is, if not the largest corn crop in history, certainly at least the second largest corn crop, and having fought against the naysayers who said that, you know, it would just not be possible to produce that much corn. It wasn't possible to produce that much ethanol. It wasn't possible to produce ethanol and not have an impact on food prices. And you have the fights, and history has proven us right. I mean, anybody today, you know, that would make an argument about food versus fuel hasn't been paying attention and, you know, doesn't realize what's really happening out there. And so the reason that I continue to be optimistic is that farmers keep proving us right over the long term.
Thank you so much. That's Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, visiting us here at the Farm Progress Show. I'm Cindy Zimmerman reporting.